Men, welcome back to the Optimized Man podcast. Before I introduce today's guest, I just want to let all you men out there know that the Optimized Man 30-day program is ready to go. This is going to give you an introduction to the Optimized Man program. It's going to start you on the journey to becoming your best self, your strongest, your leanest, your most athletic, your most confident. Whatever your goal is, I can assist you here with the Optimized Man 30-day program. Hit me up on Instagram at Optimized Man, book a call, send me a DM, and we're going to get you started to becoming your best version. Now, today's guest is Cameron Aitken. Cameron is a private chef. He's also been a personal trainer, and he's currently a money mentor and a money coach. He has had an amazing journey. From breaking his back to being 160 kilos overweight and also having to deal with the issues that pain meds can sometimes bring. He shares his story, it's inspirational and it's motivating. So, enjoy the podcast, take some time to listen to this. Like, subscribe, comment and share. Here it is, guys. Have a great day.
Getting a bit of different perspective on men's experience with it is interesting. You know, everyone's got their own story with body image insecurities or body image positivity kind of thing. So I'll ask you a question. Like, what's your experience with, say, body image over the years?
Well, I've had a bit of a varied experience. Like, if you go back to a little bit younger, well, not younger, but like maybe 8-9 years ago, you know, I broke my back, and then I went from being capable to being pretty much bedbound for like 8-12 months. And over that period of time, like, I lost my purpose.
Mm.
And so once I lost my purpose, I just packed on the weight. Mm. It's like the opioid, like using the endone to kind of escape the world and the pain. And then, you know, the medical advice I had back then was, lay flat, don't move for, you know, 8 months. The back needs to reset. You know, looking back at what I know now, probably wasn't the best advice that was given to me.
Mm.
But back then it was like there was a lot of gray space in what you could do, and it wasn't necessarily like information wasn't as free. There wasn't as many influencers out there or people sharing their stories.
Mm.
So you kind of like, I think, in that sense, like my body image, like I wasn't even aware how bad it had got.
Mm.
Until I was aware, you know. Mm. Like it was like out of sight, out of mind. My only mission in life at that point was to survive, and then and then all I was interested in was what can help me escape what's going on in my life. And so food, endone, and whatever was on the telly.
Yeah. Okay.
I blew out. So I went from like 90 kilos fit and active to 160 kilos.
160.
Yeah. And wow. Fat. Not like, you know, some blokes are getting around and you're like, oh, you've got a rig on you, but you've got a bit of a winter coat. It's more like
not powder, a couple of fat.
Nah, it was like jelly donut fat.
Yeah, wow. Like, yeah, I didn't know that. So what were you like, what was the turning point for you? Because obviously you're in hospital for 8 months, or were you out of hospital, like recovering, laying down for that long as well?
So they kick you out pretty quick. They, like, once you got your x-rays and all that, like that's all the hospital surgery. They kick you out. So I was in bed flat for 8 weeks, no movement or minimal movement. Like, go to the toilet. That was it. And then, 8 months, minimal movement, stay in bed.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
And so did that. Yeah, blew out. And then, you know, the change came more so from a, like, well, I've got to reclaim my life. Like,
yeah.
I can't, you know, like, you got your crossroads. You can go, well, I can stay like this and this can be my story. This is it. I'm the fat guy with a broken back. Or, you know, you can go down this way and I can figure it out and it just be a part of my story.
Mm.
And so you know, and then fortunately enough, I've been in trade for a long time, and I've kind of developed that theory in my mind of, well, if I'm going to learn something, I'm going to get paid to learn it rather than pay someone to do it for me. So that comes from like that background as a chef. And then, so I just became a personal trainer. You know, I was your fat PT. I was 130 kilos training people in the gym, and used to, you know, a bit of a giggle when people said you can't be fat and train people. I was like, well, you're always smaller than someone. So
yeah,
do what I want.
Yeah, it's a good point because, you know, a lot of people say, oh, I wouldn't take nutritional advice from an obese doctor, right? I mean, they obviously have some experience in what can be good for you in terms, but I guess it's the difference between the person who is on the journey of becoming better. You know, you can be that 150 kilo guy, but you've already lost 30 kilos and you've got some really good discipline and routines going, right? And you can offer a lot of value to people.
Yeah, and just I think it was like putting yourself in an environment whereby you can't be 160, like can't be 130. It's like working in fine dining restaurants. You just can't be shit. Like you can start at a low level of skill set, but you've got to rise to where the rest of the guys are because they're not going to shrink so that you fit. And so it's the same as working in a professional gym environment. You know, you can either rise to the experience, like to the expectations and experience on the gym floor, or you can make up excuses and it not work. So even if I didn't have the discipline, it might have been more desperation that was fueling that to start with, like desperate to get my life back, more desperate to fit into the new environment, desperate to make things work. Like I had no money, I was sleeping on couches, like things like that. So there was more probably desperation than discipline.
Yeah.
If I was being honest. And you know, they say like you said, that don't take advice from an obese doctor. It doesn't necessarily, like if I think about it, doesn't necessarily translate into the fitness world, because the difference is it's like a doctor won't take that ownership and say, yes, I'm fat, because they're pedestaling and they've been pedestaled. So in society, there's like that hierarchy, like, you know, there's like that hierarchy, you know, doctors, words.
Yeah.
Where the personal training world, it's like, I can, whether I'm fat or not, the formula doesn't change. No one's the exception. It's, you know, do the work and figure out what's going in your gob so that it works best.
Yeah. Were you, sorry.
No, you're right. Yeah.
Were you focusing on like, did you have like an overarching goal? Was it just like, I have to get to this certain weight level? Or was it like, I just want to make sure I can move properly first and not be in pain? Like, were there a couple of different motivators?
Yeah. So I found like focusing on weight just didn't work. It had to be bigger than that. So I felt like the weight, I knew instinctively enough that if I could get moving, that I just didn't, you know, at that time I was drinking and I was like, I was still escaping from the world. So I was still relying on endone. I was still drinking.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't necessarily eating the best because I didn't have a lot of money. It's the irony. You can always find money for some things, not all things. And then I focused on movement. So initially when I started, I could move my legs like, I don't know if that's going to work, but like that much. So I had like minimal movement in my like hamstring kind of tightness.
Yeah.
So that, I just set that as the first goal, to get mobile. And then I just set pain markers. Like the goal was to be in less pain, you know, when I get out of the car so if the goal was to be in less pain getting out of the car, then what was the pain? Pain was the knees, the lower back. Okay, well, how am I sitting in the car? How am I getting out of the car? And then ultimately, if I wasn't as fat, would this be less painful? Yes. Yeah. Okay, well, reduction of size, da 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 da.
Yep.
Gonna help me there. So
did you find you go.
No, yeah. So like if I'm looking back at it, like anytime I've set weight as the goal, it wasn't enough pain, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think it's pretty, seems to be an underlying thing like that, that the 12 week or, you know, like the challenges, the 1 month challenge to lose 5 kilos, like they're never very sustainable. So I was talking to another guy too about it the other day, and he was kind of the opposite side of the spectrum. He had bad posture, sore back, but he was way too skinny. So he was kind of on the other side, but he started to focus on just being able to move properly and to be able to do 10 push-ups, 10 chin-ups, and just do as many as he can eventually. And a good point was, he like, rather than get young kids to focus on, you know, like worrying about body image so much, just trying to get people to move properly and focus on movement and building those skills. And the byproduct most of the time, if you've got a bit of nutrition down, is you get fit, healthy, you look leaner, maybe more muscular, you know, and hopefully you build up some good habits and not those negative habits around, you know, calorie restriction and, you know, spewing up after you're eating or something like that.
Yeah, and that's so prominent, right? Like, I didn't realize how many blokes do it as well, but I know it's predominantly a female habit of like that, putting your fingers down your throat. But I've done it once. I fucking hated it. I was like, I just am not going to eat that much. This is like my bottom point for me. Bottom of the shower, just fucking like I'd overeaten. I'd been on such a deficit for so long. I scoffed like a pig, like an old demon had kind of taken over me. And like real self-deprecating behavior. And I was like, what, it, you know, just like this moment of awareness, like, what am I doing? I don't need to do this. I'm capable. I'll get it done. Like, it's going to take a bit. And I find like the scales can sometimes just be your biggest enemy. You find yourself, and so like they can be a big tool, but if you find they're going to be detrimental to you, then find different ways.
Yeah,
take photos, measurements, do all three, or you know, I think the biggest thing is like just having some self-awareness.
Yeah,
and then kind to yourself, like what you were saying. It's like, you know, I recently, so I was 130, I got down to 80 something, and then I left the personal training world, like working on a gym floor, and I got to I got back up to like 100, and during COVID there I got back up to like 100 and something, 120 I think it was. And you know, then did a 12-month worked with a bodybuilding coach, and pretty much I identified during COVID is like, I, because I was working in FIFO chefing type environments.
Yeah.
I body image wise, I was not comfortable, and it impacted my, it impacted my work ability to work. It impacted my empathy, like my sleep.
Okay.
But most, like, I just wasn't enjoying, being alive at that point. Like, and it didn't look like there was a way out, that I could, I didn't know how to pull up the handbrake. Like I didn't know where the full stop was going to be. And I, because every day up there, it was like, it grabbed my emotions. It pushed, it would trigger my lack of self. Like it would start telling me I'm not worth it. Like I'd start this non-worth it type dialogue in my head.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, oh, fuck it. Next thing I got a scoop of ice cream, some milk and some Milo. And you're like, and that became a daily habit. And you know, the gyms aren't open and you can't do anything. It's all of a sudden you're gone from a large to an extra large pair of pants.
Yeah. Okay. And is that when you reached out to a coach and you got a, and you started working with a bodybuilding coach?
Yeah. So, I already knew, I kind of made an agreement with myself that when I left the environment, I was, my goal on FIFO in the end, when I kind of realized I was going the wrong way, I just said to myself, right, I'm just not going to get fatter. And I'm just not going to get fatter, and I'm just going to maintain where I'm at. If I lose some, cool, but I'm just not, like, 120 is my non-go. I'm not going past this. And I got back down a little bit. I'd go for runs on my day off when we started getting time and all that to be able to go outside. And then it was around then, near the end of that, I was like, okay, cool. Well, I don't want to just get a coach and say, here, you're responsible for it. Like, if I'm going to get a coach, I want a coach that you're going to do the work. Like, you're going to tell me what I need to eat, and you need to tell me how I need to train and when I need to check in. I'm going to give you that responsibility. That's what I'm paying for. But I'm going to go do the emotional work.
Okay.
Like the habitual work. Like, why do I feel like I deserve to sit down on the couch? Why do I feel like I'm entitled to that piece of chocolate? Like, why am I justifying these other things that are kind of like, I was aware that there were patterns from the past. Like, you know, the 160 kilo dudes coming out and playing, you know, and then I'm having to deal with it in the current and the future. So a lot of it was to do with self-image, in the sense of, like, you look in the mirror and you go, fuck, you're a funny looking shape, you know?
Yeah.
And you just avoid that.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of self-love there. And I think a lot of it was to do with the environment I was in. You know, it wasn't a very loving environment or accepting.
Yeah. Yeah. Fly in, fly out. So what's like, is it, because I try and talk to some of my clients about, you know, a lot of it can start in the head, you know, with that negative or positive self-talk, depending how you do it. But some people start by taking like physical action first. But I mean, for my experience, I was obsessed with, you know, like one part of my body, say my chest, when I was in my teenage years and my 20s. And I would, you know, I would try and really limit how I was speaking to myself negatively. But I was finding myself constantly, especially in high school and early 20s, is, you know, you'd look in the mirror and you'd be like, or you'd walk past a reflection at the shop window and you'd check yourself. So I'd be saying, oh, no, you need to have your shoulders pulled forward more so you can hide your chest. Don't walk with your shoulders back. Or you'd pull your shirt away from your body, right? Just to loosen it up a little bit because it's hugging your chest or your stomach too tight.
Yeah.
So were you, did you find like, did you kind of pair your negative, trying to change negative self-talk with action as well? Or did that positive self-talk come in first during your days laying down on the chair, on your bed? And then you kind of, that took the next step towards physical action? Or was it kind of all one kind of thing?
Are we talking about like from post-injury or just recently?
Yeah, well, I guess in general, like post-injury and then, yeah, wanting to take those next steps to becoming a fitter version of yourself, like that, where you were probably at your darkest, when you're at your worst, you know, post-injury.
Yeah, so the like post-injury, it's a bit of a haze because, like, I was abusing Endone. So I knew that – how do I – so the driver for the post-injury one was more for the fact, like, I went from working in high-end fine dining and was finally – like, my career was always about going overseas and being able to – and be sought after to go and to do that. And so my team and I had finally been picked up to go and work in, you know, ski resorts overseas. And a couple of days later, I broke my back.
Yeah.
And the whole team kind of just – the whole opportunity fell apart. Some of the guys went, some of the guys didn't. It just wasn't there anymore. So I lost a lot of purpose. Like, I hadn't lived at home since I was like 18. Anyway, doesn't matter. I hadn't lived at home for a long time and been pretty self-sufficient and traveled around Australia and worked. So when I returned back to mum and dad's place and they would put my socks on my feet, like, I was like, fuck, you know, like, you don't have, there's a lot of lack of self-worth and a real kind of slob like perception of self. And it was actually the frustration of the specialists and the lack of information that I was getting that drove me to go, well, fuck you. Like, you're telling me, you're not even telling me I can't, you're not telling me I can. Like, I'm just sitting here getting fucking worse. My money's disappearing. I can't do anything. Like, gone from being action driven in my career and working, you know, 70, 90 hours, no problems, to, you know,
yeah,
I'm fucking dead. I can't move. So it was more the pain of the frustration of not knowing and not being able to get information that drove me to kind of get out of bed and start getting on the bike, start reading, start pushing the boundaries a little bit more.
Mm.
That's support of my parents. Like my dad would be like, right, we're going for a walk.
Mm.
You know, the first couple of months, first little bit, I could only get down to the end of the driveway. Then I had to have a sit and he'd carry a chair and then he'd bring me back. And then we'd get further and further and further each time. So, so it was that kind of stuff. So it was more the pain of not having a purpose and just like I lost, like a part of me died. Like I really feel like that at that time, that character that I was as a chef and in that environment and with the friendship circle and all that, you know, gone. So I just knew I didn't want to stay there anymore. So it was the pain of where I was at. That was more the driver and that got me up and
yeah. Okay.
And then the most recent one, you know, I went from 120 down to 72 kilos and that was more physical. So I knew that I had achieved some physical gains in the past, like, you know, on the gym floor and all that, where you're like, you got to be worried about how you look and be confident in your skin. That was good. And I remember how I looked then and now how I was healthy. So I knew I could do it, but I'd never seen my abs. And I was chatting to a friend who's a bodybuilder and she was saying, what's your negative association with abs? And then it was like, just worked through what my negative perception was to abs. And it, you know, the kind of people that have them, the being picked on by people with them and the gym floor memories and all that stuff, dissolved that and decided, well, I'm just going to do this until I can see my abs. And so that was the goal. It was like all physical goals led to there.
Yeah.
So it wasn't about how much I could press. It wasn't about any of that. It was like, well, how diligent can I be with the nutrition to get to that?
Yeah. Did you really start to see like your confidence in yourself change during those periods, like going from that 120 all the way down? Like, were you slowly being able to feel more confident if it's standing up tall with, you know, your shoulders back and you're not worrying about where your stomach sits? Were you noticing those shifts?
Yeah. So initially the initial scene where I was at, like taking photos. So I mean, I didn't have a partner, so I didn't take photos. I just took a video and then I took screenshots. I think sometimes that can be the biggest hurdle for people is like, well, I haven't got someone to take the photos and it's embarrassing if I ask someone. So that was definitely mine. And I wasn't about to ask my flatmate to do it for me. So seeing those photos, first of all, was like, oh, fuck, bro. You've let yourself go. Like I knew the number, but I didn't know the image. You know, those mirror, like you see those memes on social media where a guy looks in the mirror and he looks all tough and he's just a flubby dude.
Yeah.
It was very much like that. I was living in my head a different way to where my eyes were.
Okay.
And so that first one was a bit of a rocker. I was like, oh, like I knew it was bad, but I didn't know it was like the back of the legs bad.
Yeah.
The back fat bad. It was like, oh, god damn, boy, enough carbs on your back to feed a fucking family. So you know, I was like, okay, do some work. So that was good. And you know, I also had a lot of resistance to calorie counting.
Yeah.
And then I worked through that as well. But initially the first part, like that first 20 kilos, probably first 15, was like, it came off easy. So that first 10 kilos comes off easy. And so that gives you a bit of confidence to be like, okay, cool. Like using a coach, especially, like I knew that they had the track record because I'd seen it in the people they had worked with that I knew. So I knew that they had the track record. Now, were they the most nurturing and They weren't, but that wasn't their job. Their job was to what I need to eat and reply to my check-ins. That was it. Like they weren't there to follow me up and hold me accountable. That I used them to be self-accountable. And so, yeah, when that first couple of kilos came off, what I found was when people started noticing I had lost weight, that kind of was, for me, it was very awkward. Because it's like, oh, hang on, I don't want to be in a spotlight. I don't want, like, that praise in the past has kind of knocked me off my horse, if you will. I'm like, oh, someone says I look good. Oh, I can just stop. So that you know, that body image part was actually what I identified in my journey was like something that was actually a negative. Like, so I would tell friends, hey, I'm doing this thing. Like, I appreciate your support. Support me by, let's go for a walk and get a coffee. Support me by when I come around for dinner, if I bring my own food, don't make a deal out of it. Like, if we're cooking and I haven't brought my own food, just know that I'm allowed, like, I've accommodated my training.
Yeah, that's interesting because I haven't heard too many people mention when they get the praise and the compliments that it's actually kind of doesn't feel good for them. You know, obviously you give people compliments and they're like, oh, you're hard work, you know, you're doing really well. And yeah, it could kind of work the other way a little bit because you don't want to be on the spotlight. You might have been a shy kind of, you've been insecure about body image a bit, and then all of a sudden people are like telling you every day, you know, it'd be quite confronting for some people, I guess.
It can be also like, you know, if you think about it, like if you've been fat most of your life and then you drop down and you've never heard that kind of praise before, it can be quite addictive as well and uncomfortable. You know, you start seeking it, so you start positioning yourself for it. So yeah, I think it's, and it depends where it's coming from and who it's coming from. Yeah, it's like when I stopped using endo, no one knew that I was abusing it or that I had stopped. They just noticed a difference in my character. And that was kind of what I identified in my thing is like, I don't necessarily put out my celebrations enough. With that. But like when I got to 72 kilos, I didn't put a post up about it. My coach did. So most people in my life, they never know I got there. I wasn't doing it for them. I was doing it for me. And then I think a part of it as well is like when people start becoming aware of it, it's the little bit in the back of your head. It's this fear of, but what if I fuck it up? Then I fucked it up. Everyone's going to know I tried and failed. So it's kind of like you go to work in the quiet. Until I knew I'd kind of got it, I was like, so like I sit around, you know, between 90 and 95 now. You know, I've still got a gut, but I've just finished doing. It's about the awareness of it. It's like, how did I get back to here? It's like, well, got COVID, got sick, then I, you know, had a massive 6 months of work, traveling all around Australia, not always where a gym was working. You know, anywhere. 10 to 16, 18 hours a day in environments rich in food. So, you know, the fact that I only put on 10 kilo from 85, which was where I was at when I, my maintenance. I'm all right with it. It's like, but I wouldn't be all right with it today with my old mind. If that makes sense.
And you,
so I've still,
I was going to say, you've developed the tools as well and the awareness of what needs to be done, how you've felt in the past. You know, you've got the tools that are capable of, you know, getting you where you want to feel, where you feel comfortable.
Yeah, that's right. I'm armed. It's almost like you, like, which can also be a detriment because like you can get confident and be like, oh, well, I'm here. I know how to get back. And then you see it in blokes as well. They're like, yeah, I know how to get back. And 10 years later, you're like, do you still know how to get back? Because you've gotten bigger.
And it gets harder, obviously, the older you get, team Sue.
Yeah, ego keeps kicking in and the more and more. So I think you're right, those tools are good, and that knowing and that confidence of knowledge is beneficial to a point. I think then after like if I stayed like this for 6 months, then that would be the turning point. I'd go backwards. But it's like, I'm not going to. I'm already on the wagon. I've been back, I've rested, I've done all my stuff, food's prepped. I know where I'm on to. So, I know I just got to plug back into that process and I'll get the results because I'm not the exception to the rules.
Mm. Yeah. And it's a good point too. Like it's a journey, it's part of your lifestyle for you to be a healthier version of yourself. We're always striving to be better, but you being healthy, fit, comfortable with yourself, like it's part of probably who you are now of maintaining that type of purpose for the rest of your life. Like me being a trainer and a coach too, like it's part of my lifestyle. And that's what I guess I try and push in people is don't worry about going hardcore for 6 weeks and then not doing anything after that. Just if you can start off slow and let's build a routine and a habit to the point that you enjoy it enough that you want to come back every second day to train, and you're implementing things in the house that you didn't before that are your part of your new lifestyle. So it's that kind of short-term fix versus the long-term goal.
Yeah, and I think like set better quality goals in the sense that you want to get the weight down. Who gives a fuck? Like weight doesn't matter. It's like, how do you want to feel in that shirt? Do you want to be doing this all the time?
Mm.
Or do you want to just fucking put a shirt on out of your drawer confidently? Be like, yeah, bang, wearing this today.
Yeah, no questions. Yeah.
I'll put it on and walk around going, oh, it's fucking, it's a bit tight. Put it on as confident as you put your socks on. Make that the goal. Or is the goal for me, it was chin-ups. I could do a chin-up and it sucked. Like it was hard just for a single. I was like, oh man, I'm not strong in this movement. So I set a goal. I want to be able to do 10 chin-ups, full down, up, no cheating, no swinging, locked in, like toes pointed, all that stuff. And I was like, cool. So every day we'd go in and do one. And I didn't put a time limit on it. I think sometimes we can really dishearten ourselves, like we're setting a goal within a certain time. So initially I started off and I was like, I've got to get to this weight by this time.
Mm.
And I didn't get there. It'd be like, ugh.
Yeah, but you might have lost 2 kilos out of that 5, which is still good.
Yeah, that's right. I think just a good reminder of you set the goal. So just change it. You set the goal today without the anticipation of what's coming on. Like I can't know that, in May last year, April last year, I couldn't have known I was going to have the 6 to 8 month run of work that I was going to have all around Australia. Mm. It wasn't on the books. In April, I had no work for the year. I was looking at what I could be doing. And then a phone call late at night, had me on a plane the next day, and that was it. I was, I had the same undies with me for pretty much 7 months.
Yeah.
So you got to go, I set this goal. I couldn't achieve it. Now I could be arrogant and beat myself up and be like, you fucking should have been able to.
Yeah. Well, I'd say just before we do wrap up, what would you say? Do you have a little bit of advice for men in particular who might be kind of going through a similar journey that you were, in terms of body image and confidence?
I just think the biggest tip you could have for yourself is if you do find yourself on the couch doing the wrong thing or at the pub, not the wrong thing, but if you find yourself with some old habits creeping in, is be aware of them and then just ask yourself, is this going to help me get closer to or further away from what it is I say I actually want?
Yeah.
And then get your answer and then ask yourself is what I say I want actually what I want? And if the answer is yes, pull your head in.
Yeah. ask for help, take some steps, take some action.
Yeah. And, you know, like if you don't have the answers, someone does, especially working with someone like yourself, you know, ask them for help. That's the idea. It's put your hand up. Hey, I don't know what to do with this. Someone will give you the answer.
Yeah. No, really good, Cam.